talking about the malacha of tzoveya on Shabbos, of coloring something. And we said all of the malachas on Shabbos have to somehow find their way back to the malachas ha-mishkan, to the way the mishkan was constructed. So the Gemara says in Masechta Shabbos, Daf Ayin Gimel, that one of the lamatas avos malachas is tzoveya. Where did we find tzoveya? Rashi writes there in Masechta Shabbos, Daf Ayin Daled, that tzoveya was when they had to dye all of the different materials in order to create the Oros Elim Adamim and all the different colors that were necessary for the construction of the Mishkan. That is where we had the Malacha of Tzoveya being done. And therefore, says the Gemara, it is now considered to be a Malacha for us on Shabbos. So the Rambam says, and defining the Malacha of Tzoveya, the Rambam says, Eina Tzoveya Chayiv Ad Shiyehe Tzeva HaMiskayim. The Rambam says the only time you're going to violate the prohibition of Tzoveya is when it is a tzeva hamiskayim, when it is of permanent nature. However, says the Rambam, if it's a tzeva she'eno miskayim, if it's only of temporary nature, the Rambam writes, pater. And the Rambam tells us very early on in the laws of Shabbos, anytime I say the word pater, it doesn't mean it's allowed. But rather, he says, it means pater aval asur. It means it's not allowed, it's an issur derabanan. So that is the assumption that we're working with. And we started to give a number of examples last week. Let us just get into some very relevant shilas that come up halacha lemaisa, and certainly in the summer months, these are things for us to consider. So number one, Rabbi Levi Yitzchak Halpern. I remember as a child, my father always used to show us the svarim of Rabbi Levi Yitzchak Halpern. I'm sure many in the room probably never heard of him. He is a great Talmud Chacham in Eretz Yisrael who runs the Machon LeTechnologia. And my father always told us growing up, he said, watch, Rabbi Levi Yitzchak Halpern is going to be the next Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. That's what he told us as children. And he was very excited every time he got a new sefer from Rabbi Levi Yitzchak Halpern. I'm not sure what happened. He didn't become as famous as Rabbi Shlomo Zalman, but he is very well known in Eretz Yisrael. And he deals very much with the mitzias of today, with many of the circumstances that we are confronted with today, with technology and with science. And he tries to figure out how that integrates with the age-old process of halacha that we all need to follow. So here, he talks about the situation that we sometimes find when you have a children's sippy cup, where the nature of the cup is created as such. Somebody from last week asked that we expand upon this a little bit more. The nature of this cup is such that we want to make sure the child is safe when they drink whatever item is inside of the cup. So it is made in such a way that if there's going to be too high of a temperature from whatever substance is poured in, the cup will change to be a different color. So would you be allowed to use such a cup on Shabbos, or perhaps that is tzoveya? When I pour in the hot or the cold water, that would be something that would automatically create this effect. It would make the cup turn into a different color. Is that something that we would allow or not? So Rabbi Levi Yitzchak Halpern writes a very beautiful tshuva about this, and he says the following. This is printed first in the Yeshurun, which is a very important Torah journal. Later on, it was reprinted in his own svarim. I think when he prints enough articles, then he collects them together and prints them on his own. But it was first printed in the Yeshurun, and he writes the following, Kosos hamatzupim v'chomer shetzibo shachar. He says you have a cup that is black. Umitchonosav ha'yichudit. The uniqueness of this cup is that when it gets too hot, umizbaher umishtane letzeva lavan. It then changes to become a totally different color, in order that the parents should realize, don't give this to your child now because it is too hot for them to drink. Alatzipo yashachar, he says, number two, it's not just that it changes from dark to white, but he says it also changes because on that black covering that it has on the regular cup, it has all kinds of letters and images. Shebedera klal heim nirim bekoshi betzura keyamiyot. It's almost invisible. When you look at this cup, you can't even see the letters, you can't see the words, you can't see any images. However, he says, when you pour in this burning hot water into the cup, hofei chatzipu yasivo letzeva lavan, all of a sudden the cup changes colors, and therefore now the letters now protrude, and these kinds of images will be noticeable as well. And therefore he asks, is this something that would be a prohibition of tzaveh on Shabbos? Kayotze bazeh, kayamim bakbukim latinokos, you have children's bottles. Misug misuyami says these are very specific companies that manufacture them, very particular brands. Asher besof hakashit shel bakbuk, I don't know exactly what kind of bottles these are, but he says right at the end of the straw, yesh makom simun miyuchad, there's a separate gauge there. Shabim mozgim bo mayim chamim, if you're going to pour hot water into the bottle with a temperature that is too high for what's normal for a child to drink, mischalev tseva hasimun. Whatever this bar is on the top of the bottle will now change from being green to yellow, from being blue to red, whatever it might be. Are you allowed to use these kinds of bottles on Shabbos when you know that by pouring in hot or very cold water, it will change something on the outside perimeter of this cup? Is that a malacha of Soveya? Or perhaps not. He says, Hinei b'nogela etzem shinei hatzvayim hamisrachshim kitotza mikor o michom. He says, when we talk about something that changes from the heat or from the cold, ein lachush bazeh lo mishum isur tzoveya v'lo mishum isurei molid o tikun mana. He says, there is no problem of tzoveya. And you have to ask yourself, why not? So perhaps you'll say, because it's not a tzeva hamiskayim. It's only going to be temporary. It's not going to be there for a long time. Once the temperature cools down or gets hotter, whatever it might be, it will change back to what it originally was. Now, that can't be the answer. Why? Because as we mentioned, the Rambam clearly writes, even if I have a tseva she'eno miskayim, even if I have a color that changes, and it's not going to be of everlasting nature, it is going to only be temporary, we still would assume that that is an iser derabanan. The Rambam says pater. Pater means pater avalasar, means midrabanan, you're not allowed to do it. And therefore, what is the heter? So he goes on to explain, and this is what my father has told me on many occasions. It's true. The Rambam says that a tseva hamiskayim is the yisur d'araisa. When it's going to be of everlasting nature, that's the malacha that the Torah describes. However, a tseva she'ena miskayim, if it's of temporary nature, writes the Rambam, it's still asur d'rabanan. That's aroi. It's still a problem. However, Rav Moshe Feinstein is of the opinion that we have a third category, and that is aroi d'aroi. Something that doesn't even register. This is going to change colors for such a short period of time. It's just going to be there for 2 minutes, 3 minutes. That's not even called aroi. That's not even temporary. That's nothing at all. And therefore, he's of the opinion here that that would not be a problem of tzoveya, even though we normally adopt the position of the Rambam that if it's a tzeva she'eno miskayim, it's still aser midrabanan, but it has to be something that lasts for a certain limited period of time. But here it's going to be so transient, it's going to switch over so quickly that it wouldn't even register at all to be a malacha, not to araisa, not to rabbanan, and therefore he says, me'ikar adin, this would be mutter. Ella, he says, in the end of his whole argument, he writes, mikol makom miyostov min arai b'makom ha'efshar, if it's possible, and your child is willing to take the other kind of bottle from what they normally would use, ha'efshar lihimana milihishtamosh behem b'shabbis, kishamofiim aleim kituvim v'rishumim shonim, if you're able to find a different bottle in the house and you don't have to get involved in this whole question, he says, obviously, that would be something that is preferred. But for many people, that all they have is one kind of bottle in the house and the child is used to using this kind of bottle, he says, me'ikar adin, there would be no problem. Now, one line that he adds in here is very surprising. He says, l'chol hapachos, let's say you don't have another option in your house and all you have is this cup. Writes Rav Halpern, at least you should lahastir es hakituv harishum sha'aleim ba'ofen shiyir begeder psikresha delo ichpasle. So he has a chiddush here. He writes, if I have this kind of bottle, and that's the only one available to me on Shabbos. So he says, it's probably mutter, but I would suggest, he writes, that you should cover over the outside perimeter of the cup. This way, if the color changes, he won't even notice it. And that makes it a psikresha delo nichale. It means you don't care about it because you can't even see it. Now that is a very good question. I remember that is exactly the problem. He has a big chiddush here, and it's not entirely agreed upon that he's right. I remember a number of years ago, my first year in Camp Simcha, there was some kind of refrigerator. All the refrigerators are left inside of the kitchen, locked up, that only the kitchen staff is allowed to use. But they always wanted to have one refrigerator outside of the kitchen so girls can come in the morning and make their own coffee. You don't have to make the waiters do it for you. So they wanted to have a kitchen outside that was only with milk inside and whatever it was that was necessary for people to make coffee and tea in the morning. So they leave this refrigerator outside. We noticed the first Friday when they bought this new refrigerator that there was a thermostat, a digital thermostat on the refrigerator. It was a commercial refrigerator. So there was a thermostat on it, and the question was, how do we deal with that on Shabbos? How do you deactivate the thermostat? So we asked the electrician, is there a way to deactivate it? He said, yeah, it's very complicated. So somebody suggested maybe we should just tape it over. And this way, when it's taped over, it becomes, even though every time I open up the refrigerator, the temperature is going to go down. And when I close it again, the thermostat is going to raise the temperature up, and it is going to make a digital difference. I'm going to be able to see it if I tape it over, and now every time we open and close it, nobody's going to be able to see it. That's no longer a psik resha because nobody cares about it. I can't see it, so what's the difference? So I remember I thought that was a very interesting point. I didn't think it was correct, but I thought it was interesting. Maybe he has a point. I later found that Rav Halpern writes exactly that point here. He says, at least if you're going to use one of these cups, cover it over, that you won't be able to see. I remember I called my father that Erev Shabbos and I asked him, would that be a good solution? And he said, of course not. What does it matter if you see it or you don't see it? So you're thinking straight. He says that whether or not you see the letters that are being displayed doesn't make it a psik resha de lo nichale. He said, from the fact that you went ahead and spent the extra money to buy this kind of fridge that has the temperature displayed on it means it is something that you want. And every other day of the week you do want it. So what does it matter that you cover it over? You went out of your way to buy this kind of refrigerator. That means this is something that is of interest to you. And therefore, it's hard to argue that that would be a psik resha de lo nichale. Again, Rav Halpern writes here, maybe it would be, because as long as right now the activity that I'm doing is such that I don't see what's happening, I don't notice any change, it means it doesn't matter to me. That is a very interesting point, but very easily arguable. Yes?
Generally, most poskim hold a psik resha de lo nichale is usher, at least the Rabbanan.
Correct. Many hold it's usher anyway. Some say there's a difference between psik resha de lo nichale, psik resha de lo ichpasle. It's a very good question. But there are many who hold that a psik resha lo nichale b'makom tzorach gadol might be permissible under a number of circumstances. Rav Halpern writes over here, being that me'ikar adin I hold that it's mutter anyway for the whole argument that he gives. He says you should make machmir on Shabbos and don't do it. But he says you're going to be machmir on Shabbos. A better way to be machmir is cover it over. So the question is, does covering it over really make a difference? Not so clear. Okay. Now, let's move on to another issue which I think really touches on a fundamental point when we discuss the malacha of tzoveya on Shabbos, and that is, you need to consider the following. Take, for example, in the summer months. It's very warm outside, and sometimes we enjoy sitting outside in the warm weather. And it's beautiful. It's enjoyable. The problem is, on Shabbos, if you're going to sit outside, and you're going to get a suntan, or you're going to be sunbathing, that is a major shaila. Maybe that should be a violation of tzoveya. Why? Because after all, it changes the color of your skin. Now you'll say to me, come on, that's not soveya. Well, last week we spoke about putting makeup on your skin, and even though that doesn't go internally into the skin, it just stays on the external, it's considered to be soveya, even though you're doing it on your skin. That's what the Gemara says. So over here the question is, would I be allowed to sit out in the sun when I know that by doing so it's going to change potentially the color of my skin? Would that be a problem of soveya? And here, this is a fascinating discussion that really touches on a much larger and fundamental issue in the whole Melacha Tzoveya in the first place. Let's see what the Machazeh Eliyahu writes. He's a fascinating tshuva sefer. He's written by one of the Dayanim in London. He's alive today. And he has very fascinating tshuvas also about very modern issues. So he writes the following about this very important question where he discusses that issue, but he really touches upon the larger issue that we're discussing here in general. And he says, Lo isbar behedya b'melacha tzoveya. He says something that is not clear to me at all when we discuss this melacha on Shabbos of Tzoveya. What's unclear to me is, im gam b'li nesinas tzeva lahadavar hanitzva. He says, for example, the real melacha of Tzoveya would be, I take a piece of wool, I put it into the bucket of dye, and now I take it out and I see the color has changed. I take paint, I go to the wall with a paintbrush, and I paint it. I take a marker and I start coloring on a piece of paper. That is Tzoveya. Correct? Everybody would agree. So he says, those are the easy cases. Now he says, we turn into unfamiliar territory. Because when I don't have one item and another item that are now going to very clearly make a change when I take the paint and put it on the wall, when that's not exactly what we're dealing with, what would be the malacha definition in this case? For example, he says, ba'ofen kimi, he says, in a case where it's only a chemical reaction that takes place, nishtana hadavar v'naset savua. Not because I took a paintbrush and I painted the wall, but because this chemical comes in contact with another one, and therefore a reaction takes place. Im gam ze mimelechas hatzvia olo. Would this be part of the overarching principle of tzoveya? Or perhaps you'll say, that's not the classic definition of tzoveya. That's not what the Gemara had in mind. Lemashal, this is a fascinating example that the Achronim talk about. I come from a family where my father's very makbid not to have green esrogim on Sukkot. He always wants yellow. Many Hasidim come from the train of thought that you should only have green. That's a muhudr. So this is a big discussion. So if you're from those kind of families that only want to have a yellow esrog on Sukkos, he says, what are you going to do? It comes the first day of Sukkos and you notice your esrog is green. So the old mom's tale is, if you put it in a bucket full of apples, so then it's going to turn yellow. That's what they say. So a number of years ago, my father decided we're going to start using Teimani Esrogim. We're not using regular anymore. He was totally convinced that the Teimani Esrogim are the right ones. Teimanim doesn't mean the huge ones. They make small ones also. So we got these Teimani Esrogim. He paid a fortune of money. We went to this guy, Rav Guri, in Brooklyn, who sells these Teimani Esrogim. He's the only one that has them. I'm sure many others have it, but he's the one who presented to us. So he made a whole presentation in YU one year, and my father was totally taken by his presentation. He decided from now on, we're buying Teimani Esrogim. Okay. So that's what we did. We got the Teimani Esrogim. He sends them to our house. He said, yeah, Rav Shechter, don't worry. I'm going to send you Mehudar Esrogim. My father paid a very hefty sum for them. And I asked him to buy for me as well. Made him pay for it. And then, after that, when we got them in the mail, he said, look, I don't want you to waste your time to come to Brooklyn to check it out. Don't worry. I'm going to send you something good. He sends it, and they're both green. So it's a week before Sukkos, and we have green Esrogim. My father is bugging out. What are we going to do? Green Esrogim is but then I'm going to have to use the yellow one that's not Teimani. He didn't know what to do. So he calls him up. The guy says, you have to put it in a bucket full of apples, leave it there for a week, and you'll see it will change colors. What he didn't tell us was, you're not allowed to close this mixture. We thought we're going to put it in a Tupperware or whatever it might be, and we closed it, and this way it really gets concentrated from the apples, and that's going to make a change. We thought it would do a better job. Turns out we take it out the first day of Sukkos, and because there was so much, I don't know what came out, acid from the apples, it turned them all yellow, but the pitam and the ukits both fell off because there was so much pressure in there. So both of them fell off. So here we were, first day of Sukkos with no kosher esrog, and we had to borrow from somebody else. It was a mazel. There was a guy in shul who actually had a Teimani esrog. So we borrowed his. It was interesting. So here he writes, what if you're one of those people that absolutely does not want to have a green esrog? And don't do what we did. Don't close it when you put the apples inside. You just put it, leaving it open to the air when you have this mixture all together. So now he writes, let's say you come Sukkos and you realize, I have not made my esrog yellow enough. And now you want to put it in with the apples. He says, would that be something that would be a violation of tzoveya? After all, he writes, I know that by putting my esrog in this basket full of apples, it is going to change, maybe not immediately, but over time it will. So am I allowed to do that? V'chein, he writes, Yeshivas Adam Keneged HaShemesh, am I allowed to go sunbathing? B'kavana Mifureshes Sheyishchar Orok Tzas Ayidei Chom HaShemesh. Am I allowed to go sunbathing when I know that the reason why I'm doing it is because I very much would like that my skin color should look different? That is Tzoveya. But on the other hand, he says, Yesh Lomod, he says, how can I say that that's Tzoveya? Am I really doing an act of Tzviya? When I put makeup on my face, I'm doing something. When I put paint on the wall, I'm actually doing the activity that's making the color happen. But over here, I didn't do anything. I put an esrog in a bucket of apples. I go outside and I lay down on a chair and the sun happens to be beating down on me. So we have the mixture of the sun and my face. All of a sudden, it becomes a whole different color. But that's not my doing anything. So he writes, this opens up a whole Pandora's box. Would you assume that that would be considered a malacha of tzoveya? And after all, he says, Yesh Lomon, maybe we can draw some kind of proof from another case in halacha. Mima shechak tuchos avik siva. There are times in halacha when you need to have something written. For example, a get, the Gemara says. You have to have a kasev la sefer krisos. He has to write the get. So what does it mean that you have to write it? So the Gemara gets into a discussion. What if you do chak tuchos? What does it mean, chak tuchos? It means I take a big bar of silver, a big bar of metal, and I start chiseling with a hammer into the metal, but not chiseling out. I just bang it in. So what's that called in English? I don't know what that is. Imprint, I guess?
Engraved.
So I engrave into the metal, and I start banging with the hammer. So now, every time I make a bang, it makes another letter, and then I have the whole get written on this plaque of silver, on this plaque of metal. Not because I wrote it, but because by the nature of my banging, I now created a whole script. So is that considered ksiva or not? The halacha is yes, that's called ksiva. And if you did that on Shabbos, you'd be in violation of kosev. So he writes, but that's not the classic definition of ksiva. If you ask somebody, please write on a piece of paper that I need 3 apples from the supermarket and 5 potatoes, they're not going to take a hammer and start smashing it on a piece of metal. That's not the normal way to write. And yet he says, since in the end of the day it brings about the result that you want, you have whatever it is that you wanted written down is now clear for you on a piece of paper or a piece of metal, that is now defined as a malach of ksiva. So he says maybe the same should be over here. If the overall objective is that the malach of tzoveya is such that something changes from color A to color B, what does it matter how you got there? If you set up a system where 2 chemicals reacted with one another and now turned into a 3rd color, that means that you have now violated the malach of tzoveya. It doesn't matter how it happened. Doesn't matter if it was a chemical reaction or if you took paint and put it on the wall. Either way, you got the desired outcome, and therefore perhaps that should be considered a malach ab tzoveya. And in fact, he says, the Mishneh Berurah does make such an argument by libun. One of the malachas of Shabbos is you're not allowed to be malabing. You're not allowed to make something cleaner. You're not allowed to take something, let's say a white towel that got dirty, you're not allowed to rub off the stain from it. So says the Mishneh Berurah, what about if my white towel got dirty, and now I put it out in the sun, and I know that by putting it out in the sun, it's going to dry out, and whatever it was that got dirty on there is going to evaporate, and it will no longer be dirty at all. Well, how can you call that malabing? I didn't do anything. All I did was take the towel, put it outside. Says the Mishneh Berurah, yes, you're in violation of the malacha malabing, even though you did nothing, because you knew that by putting that outside in the sun, this was going to be the result. So here he wonders, is that the same by every malacha? Would we assume that every malacha depends on what the outcome is going to be? Doesn't matter how you get there. Even if it's this chemical reaction that takes place, it doesn't make a difference. If you knew that that was going to happen by the result of what you did, then that's already considered that you were violating the malacha. That's his question, and that's what he wants to try to figure out. What would you say with regard to somebody sitting outside on Shabbos? If I know that by sitting outside in the sun, it is now going to make my skin turn darker, maybe that should be a prohibition of tzoveya, even though I did nothing to bring it about. But I knew that that would be the outcome from my choosing to go outside.
Walking in the sun.
Oh, so that's the question. How can you ever walk outside? Right? How can you ever walk outside? So the good news is that we don't paskin like this. So the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa writes, and number one, let's just keep in mind, Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa writes in the name of Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach that he sees nothing wrong with going outside and sunbathing on Shabbos. Now, that's provided that you're wearing Big Day Shabbos. It's provided that you're in a place that's tsanua, right? To sit out on the beach when you're going to have men and women together on Shabbos is probably not permissible for other reasons. But leaving all of that aside, you're wearing Big Day Shabbos, there is no Zilzal Shabbos, there is no Bittel Zman, and there are no men and women sitting together, not appropriately dressed. Leaving all those factors aside, says the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa, I don't think that there would be an Isser to go outside and to sunbathe. Why? Because he writes, if you would ask somebody, what is this individual doing right now? Right? You would ask anybody who sees that this person is going outside to sit. They would say, they're going outside to relax. Nobody would say, oh, they're going to violate the malach of tzoveya. If somebody sees you with a paintbrush on Shabbos going right next to a wall, they say, yeah, he's about to violate the malach of tzoveya. Somebody sees you going outside to the backyard to sit on a chair, nobody would say that that's called a malach of tzoveya. Everybody would say you're going outside to relax. And therefore he says that would not be an issue at all. That's what the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa writes. Yes. Right.
And it's only, again, maybe the copies will make it different, but the change of the color is only a function of a chemical reaction.
Mm-hmm. So the question here is, over there it's a chemical reaction, and that's the overall question that we need to think about. Is a chemical reaction considered to be a malacha, which applies to many different places? Like the Mishneh Berurah writes by Libun, that would be considered a malacha malabin, even if it's just a chemical reaction from the sun. So that's a question in general. But here the question is, when I'm filling up the cup with a burning hot liquid, right? So you'll say, what activity am I doing? I'm filling up a cup. But somebody could very easily say, no, you're coloring this cup. You want to show your kids how cute it is, how cool it is to change the color, right? That's not unreasonable to say such a thing. It is unreasonable to say that somebody who's going outside, again, unless you're one of those people who just loves to sunbathe and loves to get darker, but generally, he says, that's just a normal act of a person acting regular on Shabbos. It's like we said last week. There were many who said that the photogray lenses, the reason why you're allowed to wear them on Shabbos, many argue, is number one, it's only aray de aray. It's so temporary that it stays on there, so that's reason number one. But reason number two that some argue is because you're not doing a malacha. All you're doing is, you're walking outside. Now it just so happens to be, every time you walk outside, it's going to change colors, but nobody would say, when they watch you involved in that activity of walking from your house to the outside, that's considered to be a malacha of tzoveya. That's a strange way to, it's a strange way to categorize what the person is doing. Yeah?
Could you also throw in Bidei Shamayim, that the tanning, you don't necessarily get tanned because if it's cloudy, you're not getting tanned.
That's not what we're talking about.
But you're not really doing something.
It depends. Look, if it's cloudy outside, that's not the discussion. But what we are discussing here is when it's very sunny, and you know that you're going to get tanned outside, are you allowed to do it implicitly knowing that that's what's going to happen?
But
so the Shmir Shabbos Gehusen, what?
You're not necessary.
That's the argument. You're not doing it, but you are doing it. You're choosing to go outside. So that's the question. Okay, now let's get into the next discussion. I've been asked this question many times. Unfortunately, there are people who have glucose issues or people who have a UTI sometimes women have, or you have all kinds of different issues where somebody needs to use a URS. Does everybody know what that is? I think it's called a Regent strip, right? For a urine analysis. So they have this package of strips you can buy, and you have to do. You can do it on your own, a urine analysis, to figure out whether or not your glucose is at a certain level, or whether or not your sugars are at a certain level, or whether or not there's a urinary tract infection, all kinds of different things, or a pregnancy test, something like that. Now what happens is, this strip will turn colors dependent on whether or not there's an issue. I don't remember exactly which colors it turns, doesn't make a difference, but it changes color if there's a problem. Then it changes the color. And the question here is, are you allowed to use those on Shabbos? And often, the times that I've been asked this question are, women who are on some kind of measure to regulate their ovulation, and they're trying to really keep track of it because their fertility is having some kind of complication, so very often they also need to take these kinds of tests to figure out whether or not they are ovulating properly, or perhaps there is an issue. And this is something that is a very relevant question. And sometimes it's extremely nogea for those who are cholim with any of these issues. So this is a question. Are you allowed to do that on Shabbos, or perhaps not? So let's see. Rav Asher Weiss once wrote a tshuva. I don't believe that it's printed, but it's a tshuva because many of us in the Rabbanus are faced with this question. And there are many Rabbanim who ask this question. So he responded as follows, and he said, "Bidvar she'ilaso ha'mutar b'Shabbos laruch b'dika b'maklon Hamishana tzivo ayde chasifa l'meraglaim. When you take a strip and you now put it into the urine, would you be in violation of a malachav tzoveya? Mishtam shimbo kede livdok es ramat hasukar. For a diabetic, sometimes they need to do that in order to take stock of where their blood, where their sugars are holding. V'chein l'kvo as hayamim hapurim shel ha'isha. Sometimes women who are ovulating need to know very clearly for their fertility treatments to know where they're up to. He says that in his opinion, he believes there are three reasons why we should allow it for a chola she'em bo sakana. Chola she'em bo sakana means your life is not in danger. So if this woman is never going to become pregnant, she's not going to die, but she will be in tremendous pain, obviously. So you're going to tell a woman she's not able to do it on Shabbos because there's potentially a malach of tzaveh, that's a chola she'em bo sakana, or tzarech gadol. Now, what are the arguments to say this is permissible? Number one, Kvardanu gedole azman. This is a fascinating argument. B'malacha shenasis b'cheftza ha'omed li'ibud v'kilion miyadi. The nature of these strips, obviously nobody keeps them. You do what you have to do with it, and then you dispose of it immediately. So the nature of the strip is such that right after you do whatever has to be done, you throw it in the garbage. So is that perhaps automatically called a Eina Miskayim? That's a fascinating application. The argument is, normally I say at Seva She'ena Miskayim means if I paint something and in the next 5 minutes it's going to go away. So that's called at Seva She'ena Miskayim. But over here, it's not going to go away. It's going to stay forever. Just so happens to be, the strip itself is going to be disposed of. So would you say that that's called a Seva She'ena Miskayim? That's a Chiddush. And where does he get that from? He gets it from a tshuva in the Ma'aril Diskin. The Maral Diskin was a big charev, he was a genius. So the Maral Diskin asked, every Yom Kippur, part of the avodah was, they had the Sar la'azazel, the Sar mishtaleach, and they had the other one that was brought as a carbon in the Beis HaMikdash. And as we know, the Gemara says, when they threw the Sar la'azazel off the cliff on Yom Kippur, they used to tie a string around the horn, around the neck, whatever it was of the sire. Forgot what the Gemara says. Where was it tied? Somewhere on the animal. They used to tie a string on the horns. So the Gemara says they used to do it. Ask the Maral Diskin. Oh, Kesher Shal Kayama, you're not allowed to tie something on Shabbos. So how were they allowed to tie the string on the sire? And it was important for us because the Gemara says once they saw that it changed color. So you're saying who said they did it on Yom Kippur? They could have done it before. So the Gemara seems to say that all of the Avodah was done on Yom Kippur. And the Gemara there says that they... What? If you didn't tie it tightly, it would have fallen off. It's falling off a cliff. It would fly off in the wind, right? I don't know. So that's his kasha. So you could say, maybe it wasn't a kasha shokayama. But he says, the pashtus is they tied it on tight because they wanted it to be there. He says, how is it mutter, zakter, maral diskum? What's the problem? That's not a kasha shokayama. This animal's gone. In another minute and a half, this string is not going to be tied anymore. The whole thing's going to fall off a cliff. And no one's ever going to see it ever again. So he says, that's not defined as a kasha shokayama. So he argues here, maybe reason number one to allow this is because, by very nature of what it is that I'm doing, it's ena shokayama. Even though the color is going to be left there forever, and if somebody would go through the garbage can in a week, they'll find that the strip is still there, and it's still that color, doesn't make a difference. The nature of the strip itself is such that it is disposable, and that it is not going to be for everlasting nature, because I'm going to throw it out immediately, and therefore he argues, that's reason number one why perhaps this should be considered Eino Shel Kayama. That's a tremendous chiddush. Number two, he argues, and for this we have to give a little bit of background. The Gemara has a machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon when we have a malacha she'ein tzricha legufa. What is a malacha she'ein tzricha legufa? So that means, the Gemara says, when you have a malacha where I don't care for the desired outcome. I'm doing it for another purpose. So for example, the Gemara gives a case when somebody is doing choresh, harisha. Why do I normally do the malacha of harisha? It's because I want the hole in the ground. Either because I want to plant in it, right? Choresh zareya, that's the first of the malachas. So choresh means I'm plowing the ground. Normally the reason why I do it is because I want the hole. What if the Gemara says I'm doing choresh ve'eino tzarech ela la'afara? I have no interest in a hole in the middle of my floor here, but the reason why I'm digging it out is because I need the dirt to cover up something else in a different part of my house. There was a big spill, someone's going to slip there, so I need to take dirt and cover over the mess that nobody should slip. So I go to one other corner of the house, I start digging up a hole, and I now take the dirt, not because I want the hole, but I take the dirt because I need the dirt to cover over. That's not the normal malacha of harisha, but I'm bringing about the same result. So the Gemara says, that's a malacha she'ein tzricha legufa. That's a malacha where I'm not doing it for the normal reason that a person would do it. Or, for example, the Gemara says hotzah. The normal reason why you have a malacha of hotzah is because I want to carry something from point A to point B. Says the Gemara, what if you have a woman who needs to wear a pad on Shabbos? Why? Not because she wants to carry something from point A to point B, but rather because she doesn't want her body to get dirty. And the only way to save herself from getting dirty is by carrying this item. So is that called hotzah? It's a malacha shein tzricha legufa. I'm doing something which is the same act as everybody else is doing, but I'm doing it for a very different purpose. If I had another way to do this and to bring about the same result, I would have done that. So that's the Gemara's question about Malacha Shein Tzricha Legufa. And Rashi writes, the reason why Malacha Shein Tzricha Legufa is not considered a regular Malacha is because it's not a Malachas Machsheves. Malachas Machsheves means I have to have intent when I do the Malacha to violate this Malacha and to bring about that result. But in this case, I have intent to do what I'm doing, but I don't want to bring about that result. I don't want the hole in the ground. I would be much happier if my ground was flat. I don't want to actually carry anything. The only reason I do it is because I need to protect my body from getting dirty. So in these cases and many more, we have the discussion of Malacha Shein Tzricha Legufa, and the Gemara says it's a machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, whether that is Aser Da'araisa or only Aser Midirabbanan. Then the Rishonim have a dispute whether or not we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda or Rabbi Shimon. All the Rishonim get involved in this discussion, whether or not this is Aser Da'araisa Derabbanan. Shulchan Aruch himself has a stira. It's not clear whether we paskin Da'araisa Derabbanan. Malacha Shein Tzricha Legufa is a very complicated issue, and it's not clear at all. For example, the Shulchan Aruch writes in one place that we have a Malacha Tzeda. What is the Malacha Tzeda? Not allowed to trap an animal on Shabbos. Now, normally that Malacha is because you want to trap an animal in order to keep the hides, to keep the skin, to eat the animal. So that's a Malacha Tzeda. Says the Shulchan Aruch, what if I want to do a Malacha Tzeda not because I want the animal, but rather because there are mosquitoes in my house, or there are bees in the house, and I don't want them. So the only way to get rid of them and not bother anybody is if I figure out how to set up a trap that now they won't be in our way. So that's called a malacha shein tzricha legufo. Why? Because I don't want the intended outcome that now the animal is trapped. I just want that it shouldn't be in my way. So that's a malacha shein tzricha legufo, where the Shulchan Aruch writes that you would be potter. A second case, whatever, the Shulchan Aruch has many cases, but either way, there's a big stir on Shulchan Aruch. The Vilna Gaon talks about it, and the Rivash, and many other Gedolei Rishonim and Achronim try to figure out how do you put together all of this sugya of malacha shein tzricha legufo. Very complicated. But over here he argues that this also, the second reason why we should allow these kinds of strips to be used on Shabbos, these region strips, is because that would be perhaps a malacha she'ein tzricha legufa. Why? Normally, when I have malacha tzaveh, it's because I want the wall to be painted red. So I come with paint, and I paint it the color that I want it to be. That's because I want the intended outcome. Over here, I don't want this to turn a different color. I don't want it to turn a different color. It's a malacha she'ein tzricha legufa. Yes, the same result is coming about. It is changing colors, but it's not something that I want. It's not something that I intended to do. And therefore, perhaps that's a malacha she'ein tzricha legufa, which is potentially only an issur derabbanan. So that's factor number two, why potentially this would be permissible. Number three, he writes, perhaps we would say, the only time there's a malacha of tzoveya is when I do something that is letorech davar hanitzvah. The only time it's a malacha of tzoveya is when I go ahead and I paint my house because I want the house to be painted. But over here, the strip doesn't care whether it turns blue or it turns red or it stays white. It makes no difference to the strip itself, and it's not going to make it work better or worse. He says it just so happens to be the only way to get the result is by doing that. And therefore, he says there are those who argue that that would not be considered to be a malacha of tzoveya. But now let's look at reason number dalet that he has on the second side of the page, where he argues a very big chiddush. Amnam hanira ikar. He says, with all these three factors, I think the most important factor to keep in mind is de'ein bazeh malechas tzoveya klal. I don't believe that this is a malach of tzoveya. De'ein tzoveya ela benosein tzeva al gabi davar. The only time it's tzoveya is when I put paint on a house. V'hatzeva miskabel hu hatzeva shehi niach al gabi hadavar. And the only time that you violate the malacha is when I had one substance, and now I take it and apply it to another substance, and I now have changed the original form from what it was to be something else. Aval benidon didan shatseva miskabel einenu klal mashen natzan hatsoveya. I didn't take one color and now mix it to make something else. What I did was, I took a strip, I put it into a urine sample, and now it changes to a third color. What does that have to do with me? This is back to the original point. This is a chemical reaction that happens. That is not the malacha tzoveya. And he argues and he says that even though he doesn't believe that there are rayos to this, look at the last paragraph. The only time it can be called tzoveya is when I take one thing and because of that it turns into something else. This is his argument that is an overarching argument for many of the cases we spoke about. Where all I have is a chemical reaction that happens, he argues, even though I don't have any proof to what I'm saying, a very bold statement. He says, this is what I believe. That's not the definition that the Gemara meant of the malach of tzoveya. How can you call that tzoveya? When a chemical reaction happens because I poured liquid into a cup that now changes color, what does that do with me? Because now I took my glasses and walked outside, that's not tzoveya.
But you knew it was going to change color. Like
right.
You knew that it was going to change color.
Right.
Even though you didn't intend it, but by doing it, you knew it.
So my father argues, of course, you knew that that was going to happen. You bought those glasses, you decided.
I mean, you intended to do it.
So that's the question. On a more fundamental level, do we say that when something's happening, that's just a chemical reaction, where I'm not applying one to B, A to B and now causing a third thing to happen, would that be part of the definition or the category of tzoveya, or perhaps not? This is a major discussion. Let's say we don't use them so often anymore, the thermometer strips, right? They used to use them, but nowadays we have far more efficient ways to take someone's temperature, so that was a big discussion. Are you allowed to use one of those thermometer strips on Shabbos when also, as it touches the temperature on the person's face, I mean, whatever, the skin of the face, we would assume that it's going to turn colors. Would that be something that we would allow? Or perhaps not? Once again, that gets into this whole discussion here about a chemical reaction that happens as a result of something that I do, would that be considered a part of the category of tzoveya? Or perhaps this is something that is totally out of the limitations of what tzoveya would stop us from doing, and it would not be considered connected at all. There is a big discussion in the Achronim. We don't have time to get into everything tonight, but there's a big discussion in the later Achronim, Rav Moshe Feinstein, Rav Shlomo Zalman. Many of them talk about, strange to talk about it in a shir, but it's true, it's nogeya. When you have sometimes in a bathroom, they have those deodorizers in the toilet, right? So sometimes it has a dye in it, right? And it's going to make the water in the toilet turn blue. So how do you ever flush a toilet on Shabbos if you know that now you're going to take the white water and turn it into blue again once you flush? So what's the hetter to do that? So this was a big discussion. So there were those who argued, no, we said last week that ain't tzviya ba'ochlim. Shulchan Aruch says that there's no such thing as tzoveya when it comes to food. And therefore he says, writes the Ramah, there's no problem to mix red wine and white wine, there's no problem to make tea on Shabbos, because ain't tzviya ba'ochlim, it's not the normal way of tzoveya. So there were those who argued, well, the whole blue dye is only going into the water, and water is ochlim. So my Rabbeim have told me, that's not called ein tzviya ba'ochlim. Nobody would ever drink from that. So that's not called ochel. That's toilet water. That's not sink water. That's not tap water. And therefore, you can't use the argument of ein tzviya ba'ochlim. Many have argued, and this is what my father believes, the reason why it's permissible is for a number of factors, a number of reasons, and there are a number of potential problems. But the main reason why tzoveya is not an issue, my father says, because I never thought of this, but he said the reason why, some say the reason why they have that dye, anyone ever wonder? Why do they have it? So you could see that it's still working. You could see it doesn't need a refill yet. Right? That's the reason why they put the dye in it, so that the custodian should be able to notice whether or not this is still working. If the toilet water is not going to be blue anymore, then you know that it's no longer working and you have to replenish it. So again, that shows the reason why I have the blue is not because I'm interested in the tzoveya. It's not because I really want that the water in my bathroom should be blue. Who cares if it's blue or white? The reason why I have it is just that it should be an indicator for the custodian who's going to clean up after us, that he should know whether or not he has to put a new one in. So in that case, that's not a melacha tzoveya. I'm not doing it because I want to change the color from being A to B, but rather because I want to make sure that I still have enough deodorizing substance in there that's still able to do its job. So that's a very interesting point to consider as well, and it's something that is very widely discussed among the Acharonim. One final case that we don't have time to get into, but something for your consideration, is many diapers today come with a strip on it as well. And every time the child has a dirty diaper, it now changes from being yellow to being blue. I don't know if your children have such diapers, but that's what we have today. Diapers that all change colors. And that too is a big discussion from Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and many others. Are you allowed to use such diapers on Shabbos when you know that over the course of Shabbos, they're certainly going to change colors? So you can say, well, it's only a katan. Yeah, but still, we're not supposed to make our katanim do malacha for us. But maybe it's a davar she'ein miskayim, but it's a psikresha, you know what's going to happen anyway. Anyway, a very interesting discussion that we don't have time for. And mirtzah Hashem, we will continue again next week.